Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Hello and welcome to episode 81 of the Desi Outsiders podcast. I'm Ankita.
And I'm Meenal.
And this week we are attempting to re-record an episode that we had recorded previously and lost the audio files to. Meenal, do you want to tell them the rest of the story?
Well, I think I've already said it, and I think I just have a reputation with Desi Outsiders now to cock everything up, so I'm just going to stay quiet and just hope that this records. But before we go into the recording, I was with Ankita just 1 week ago. We were in Manchester getting ready for the Asian Media Awards, and I think it was around this time where I realized that I can never walk in heels. And heels are not made for walking.
No, Meenal, that was just karma. That was not you being unable to walk in heels. That was just plain karma? And simple karma.
Why karma?
It was karma because you stole a pair of heels from Primark. And, like, the universe was paying you back.
Is there, like, a equivalent of Primark in India? Or, like, Trivandrum?
In Trivandrum, we have a store called Max. It's not necessarily the store you go to. It's not a cheap store, but it's a store that sells exactly the same kind of things as Primark. And I would say that the lifespan of clothing that you buy at this store is about 1 to 2 years if you wear it regularly. Pretty much the same as Primark. And the items of clothing that you find are also quite similar. So in the UK, it's just the UK, isn't it, Meenal?
Primark, no, it's around Europe. Okay. Definitely around Europe. I don't know if it's in India or if it...
No.
I'm sure it will come up in India at one point. Basically, you just get clothes for like a couple of pounds or a couple of hundred rupees, basically, or for like a couple of dollars for those in America.
Yeah, it's very reasonably priced. And
but I think,
with the trends. And if Zara brings out a design, then Primark will bring out a similar design.
Yeah, we call it Primani.
It's much, much cheaper. Yeah.
So let me just clear my name here, so I don't look like a conjuice in front of everybody. What actually happened was that I bought a few things for the Asian Media Awards, like a handbag, a pair of earrings, and a pair of heels. And when I calculated everything before going to the till, I knew the total cost would be £20 or £18, which is about 2,000 rupees. And when I got to the till, the lady gave me my receipt and it came to £8, which is like 800 rupees. And then I just looked at the receipt and I knew she didn't scan my heels in. And I did like a Bart Simpson sort of thing. And I'm like, okay, thanks, see ya. And I ran off. I felt quite guilty after because I'm sure a lot of workers who work to make those shoes probably didn't get paid.
I still remember, bringing that up. Okay, so just to back up a little bit, wasn't there a phase of your life where you refused to shop from Primark because of all the Indian, Bangladeshi, Pakistani kids that
yeah, but then I realized factories? Then I realized that happens in like Gucci, mm-hmm. Emporio Armani. It happens mm-hmm. everywhere, and maybe even to an even more serious scale.
Yeah,
it's just that people have decided to give stores like Primark a bad name. Just
when you mentioned that you got it for free, I said, oh, all those poor Indian kids that all the Western families were talking
about. How many Indian Chinese kids are affected with every iPhone that's made? Or every Google phone?
Yeah.
So what actually happened was I got these heels for free and I was really proud of myself. Well, not proud of myself. That's not the right adjective to use. Let's just say I was quite bubbly about it. I was like, hey, I got a free pair of heels. Great. Life is pretty good right now.
That was also the day you just got paid.
Oh, yeah. So I was like super rich like 5 days ago. Now I'm like super broke again within 5 days.
Yeah.
And then I met Ankita and I kept telling her about my free shoes and I kept going on and on about it. And she was just like, Meenal, okay, I get it. They were free. And then what happens? We get ready and I just can't walk in them. Like, I just could not walk in them. I just
so you didn't
like...
wear them and try walking around in them first?
I did. I did, like, my own mini fashion show in Primark.
Okay.
I just, like, pretended I was walking down Fashion Week in New York, and I was doing really well. Ramp walk. And I didn't trip. I was doing pretty well. I thought, like, why hasn't, like, Tyra Banks or Kate Moss called me yet for potential New York Fashion Week?
So what changed hours later? Why were the shoes too loose for you?
I don't know. I think my feet just must have shrank in the shower or something. I don't know.
You didn't shower. You didn't shower. You were stanky. You didn't shower before the award ceremony.
I don't know what happened, but my shoes just kept slipping off from the back, and I just looked.
Can I ask though? Were you wearing sneakers when you tried? Like, when you were you wearing sneakers and socks when you went to buy the shoes?
Yeah. So I think I tried the heels with socks on. Yeah, and then I just look like... So just imagine a penguin who just had one of his legs amputated.
Yeah.
And he's just in penguin rehab and trying to walk. That was basically me.
For all the girls and boys listening, if you ever shop for heels like the ones that Mina was wearing, pretty much like stiletto heels... pretty cute, really cute shoes, actually. You try to get them in a size smaller than your original size because your feet are essentially moving forward. And also, the more you walk in them, the bigger they get. So if you want to continue wearing these pairs of shoes, then you should get them in a size smaller and not try them on with your sneaker socks on.
So now I have a pair of black heels in my room, which are a size too big for me. So either
that you didn't even pay for.
Yeah, they were free. It was great. Anyway, so we had a great time at the Asian Media Awards, and I think it was quite a big milestone for the three of us at the AC Outsiders because it was the first time where we were in a room with other people who were aspiring for the same goals and vision as the AC people in media, and it was really eye-opening to see what other people are doing as well. Because I think in the podcasting world, we seem to be in our own little bubble. And to see what other people are doing in their own thing, it was really great. And the food was actually pretty amazing. They were serving gulab jamun in shot glasses.
Yeah, gulab jamun in shot glasses. Rasmalai, that didn't taste that great, to be fair. Very few people get rasmalai right. And it's mostly Bengalis that get it right. They also had a chocolate brownie, which was like...
It was chocolate fudge.
Fudge, okay. Yeah. I didn't even try it.
Really? Why?
Because I don't have much of a sweet tooth.
It was really good. Can I just say something to our listeners as well, which is quite funny? So when we walked in to the Hilton, there was one guy taking photos, and he was acting a bit, like, clownish. Mm-hmm. And I was like, who is this idiot? Like, why is he talking like this? Why are you taking photos? Then, like, an hour later, he comes on stage as one of BBC's, like, biggest comedians, and he starts presenting awards. I was like, oh, my bad.
Yeah.
But you start to understand people have different characters and personalities because on TV they come across in a certain way. Mm-hmm. And you actually get to see them in their real flesh and you see how they behave in social situations. So to see like the cast of BBC Asia Network, to see the crew of the BBC Asia Network team and to see people from all these TV shows, to see them in their real flesh and skin, see how they act in these social situations and how they interact with people. It was really interesting because we always see people through this facade of either through a TV screen or in our case, behind a microphone. Nobody knew I'd walk like a retarded penguin, so.
You're not allowed to use that word anymore.
Oh, really?
What word are you thinking?
Penguin? I'm not allowed to use penguin anymore.
Yeah, that's the exact thing I was thinking as well. It's banned. You're not allowed to use it.
That was a good joke.
Yeah, I was saying it was very interesting for me to see how bigger groups of people that work together, when they come together to an event, human beings just tend to have this sort of tribe mentality. So I was just thinking, I don't know if I can see myself doing it because I'm not a very social person in general, but... There was a lot of politics going on as well, Mina. I don't know if you were perceptive of that.
Yeah, I was. I was quite perceptive. There's a lot of politics going on between the radio stations, the TV TV stations as well. But you know what, Ankita? I think that all of that is... I feel like they have to do that because they don't...
Even the smaller ones are getting pitted against the bigger ones. And
well, Ankita, to be fair, we had our own little clique as well. Like, the three of us...
it's just the three of us.
But if we had a bigger team, we would also be the same. We would go in as, like, DC Outsiders, as a big party of people. And we
probably would... But I was very perceptive of one particular award that they were announcing. And obviously, when someone gets nominated from this one tribe, everyone's, you know, clapping and encouraging them to go on stage or like to win the award, cheering them on. That's the word I'm looking for.
Mm-hmm.
But the smaller ones get nominated and they just have two or three people clapping. For example, us, right? But similarly, I noticed that when the small ones sometimes, especially among the radio stations, were being pitted against the bigger ones, I think one of the bigger ones kind of booed one of the smaller ones, I think.
Really?
I don't know, because I saw people from the smaller group looking very offended and turning around and looking around.
Yeah.
And I thought, okay, that's not pleasant to be them right now.
Ankita, I think there was one point where there was two people who came up on stage to present an award, and these are patients who'd survived cancer. And they came to present an award, and they were talking into the microphone, and they were obviously, it was clear they were very shy and really timid, but it was just part of their organization. They wanted to bring their brand out. And they spoke into the microphone. And this dickhead in the back of the room starts laughing at them.
I think he was more not laughing at the patients, but I think he was laughing at the presenter because he said something quite awkward, like, okay.
Yeah, but that guy... Could he go on stage and actually talk in front of 500, 600 people? Maybe he can't. But
it doesn't justify his action.
It doesn't. And I think that's why I get angry in these situations, because you have to act a certain way in these social settings and this kind of crowd. So as you said, when people were booing, when people were making fun of people on stage, or when people... I mean, I felt quite uncomfortable. There were some points where I was getting stared at. Like, is this the girl from DC Outsiders? Is this the girl? And... it does make you feel a bit uncomfortable because we're not known. But in the back of my head, that whole night, I just kept telling myself that this is just like a privilege to be at. It doesn't define us. It doesn't make us. It doesn't break us.
Mm-hmm.
We know we have all these listeners out there who are listening to us. We know we have all of this support. So one person looking down on us or someone booing someone, I mean, for me, I didn't really care. And
We didn't get booed, to be fair. We're not that popular. get booed.
Or unpopular, for that matter.
Another thing also that I noticed while we were on the subject is even within organizations and stations and nominees, when some of the people were nominated that didn't show up for the award ceremony, but they were from this particular tribe or clan or whatever... I don't know if it was because they didn't show up for the award ceremony or was it because they were not that popular among their colleagues, but there was not a lot of enthusiasm in the cheering and the clapping.
Yeah.
And again, you just know these people as personalities you follow on social media, as personalities you listen to or watch on TV. But this is when you get a little bit of an inside view into, okay, is there some politics going on over here? Why are these people not happy?
There's politics in everything, Ankita. And I think that deep down in all of us, there is some competitive edge, whether it's conscious or subconscious. I mean, for us, really, there are not many British Asian podcasters. So I don't think that would really apply to us, in all honesty. But within like something where you have radio stations, TV shows, YouTubers especially.
Journalists.
Everybody wants to be better and better than the other person sitting next to them. And it's a very human characteristic to have. And I think that there are some scenarios in your life where you have to bring out that competitive edge. Mm-hmm. And there are some scenarios in your life where you have to put that away and act a bit more humane towards other people. And
everyone's a human being in that room with their own insecurities, their own problems.
Because I'm sure these people from these big radio stations were once a small radio station.
Interning somewhere or freelancing somewhere. I mean, it's just, it's a journey, but...
I think that night we all learned quite a few lessons, which we've reflected on. And I think it was really important to be there. Not only winning the award, being nominated for the award was secondary to what we went there for. And that was to learn and to experience and to network and to meet new people. So I think...
Yeah, and before we go on our next tangent, I just want to tell everyone that we didn't win in our category, but also that our category was quite different from a regular category we would have been nominated in. So we were nominated in the best blog category. They had 4 finalists, and interestingly, they had a YouTuber and a podcast in their best blog category, because they don't have categories for YouTubers and podcasters. Yeah. And I just, and the most interesting thing is that the YouTuber is the one who won, not either of the written content generators.
Yeah. There was one proper blogger, or 2 proper bloggers, a podcast, which was us, and a YouTuber, and then the YouTuber won the best blog category. So it was a bit weird.
It's interesting to see how the aspects of storytelling that they took into consideration with all of these different people coming together under one category. I'm hoping that next time there are more podcasters from the Brit Asia community.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's hard to meet people in person. It would have been nice to meet another podcaster there.
Yeah,
you know?
Definitely. But I think we should move on to the actual podcast now before we run out of time.
I was looking at 17 minutes that we talked about this, and we have, what, another 10, 15 minutes?
20 minutes, right? 40 minutes? So just moving on to today's episode, I think it's really important that we speak about the Me Too movement, that specifically in India and in the US, obviously it's a phenomenon that's going around the whole world. But I think it's really important we talk about it, Ankita, because it's obviously on our screens all the time, on our newspapers, on our Facebook, social media. And I want to let it out my system. And maybe you do too. So just as a little bit of an introduction as to what I feel the Me Too movement is about. I think when the Me Too movement started off, there was a lot of energy and fire and passion to bring a change, which was really great. But I think now we're at a position where we've ended up in, unfortunately, into 2 extreme categories of the Me Too movement. And of course, this is like a Venn diagram again, but just to keep things quite simple, we have one side where women are fighting for the fact that women have to be believed and women are always right. And it's the only way to deal with this movement is to only believe women. But then you have the other side where you have men who feel like they're falsely accused of rape, or women who are lying about their stories. And I think that the Me Too movement has kind of been a bit corrupted now, because you have all these different stories, and I don't know if people are lying or who is lying, where this is happening, but I'm sure it's happening somewhere. I just think it's been corrupted now, and I think that the Me Too movement started off with such a great vision, and now it's sort of deteriorating a little bit.
So I wish that the most prominent area of discourse or communication was the middle ground, where people would look at the facts and they would acknowledge both sides that have raised these concerns. That would have been a very good way for our generation to, you know, respectfully educate itself. Unfortunately, that's not the case. We have, like you said, split into 2 complete extremes. One side saying only women should be, like, all women should be believed, and the other side saying that, oh, this is just free license for women to lie and destroy the lives of all these men. But during the Me Too movement, which started in Hollywood, actually, appalling stories started to emerge from, you know, both sides. You had stories of sexual criminalization, sexual abuse. You had stories that you wouldn't expect to hear from people who were so powerful, women who were so powerful, coming out and saying, to get here, I have been abused in multiple ways. Mm. And on the other hand, some stories come out every once in a while where a boy was sent to prison at the age of 16, unjustly criminalized for rape or for sexual abuse. Well, and then
the whole idea behind the Me Too movement is based solely on people's stories, right?
Mm-hmm.
And people's stories change over time. I mean, if I give you an account of what happened to me yesterday, it would be maybe like 80% accurate, 85%, I wouldn't remember. Now, if I tell my story from 10 years ago, it wouldn't... I'm not saying that I would lie about it, but I'm just saying you forget some truths or you miss out some facts, and that's very human. So this is the problem with the Me Too movement. It's based on storytelling from people who have suffered years and years of sexual abuse. So I think it was you who told me, Ankita, that, you know, there's no absolute truth. Everybody has their own truth.
There's no absolute truth. There is your truth. There is my truth. And there is, you know, the actual thing that happened. But there are only sides of the story that you will hear throughout time.
Yeah. And I think in terms of storytelling, in this case, especially with the Me Too movement, women have gone through such extreme conditions that I can't imagine. And only they know what they've been through. And I feel like a lot of the times when people have gone through a traumatic time in their life, it's quite likely they won't forget the details of it. I mean, I'm sure you've been through a traumatic time. I've been through it. Everyone's been through it in some form or another. I remember where I was. I remember what was said to me. I remember how I felt. Yeah. I remember the after effect of it. So I understand that in this case of the Me Too movement, it's important that we don't devalue their stories of women who've gone through sexual abuse. But
yeah, a good example of this would be the Judge Kavanaugh case that was going on just a few weeks ago, and how Dr. Ford confessed to remembering very, you know, some details about the assault, but she couldn't remember how she got to a party. She couldn't remember whose house it was.
But the thing is, Ankita, unfortunately, the narrative... this whole narrative is important for people to make a decision, because how she got to the house is also quite important for people to understand the full story. It's not for me, at least. I mean, it doesn't matter, because I know that ultimately the underlying issue is that she got sexually abused, right?
And it's that account of her sexual abuse that never changes. The account of her sexual abuse where she knows that she was wearing her swimming costume, so she was after swimming practice, and the reason she didn't get raped was because it was, you know, Kavanaugh was too drunk and could not figure out how to get the swimming costume.
But then you have people who will start pointing fingers and said, why did you go to that house? How did you get there?
That's the story of every Indian girl who gets sexually abused or even catcalled while walking home from work.
Like, were you wearing this? Why were you walking down this lane?
Why were you working?
Yeah.
Why were you getting back from work only at 6 o'clock? Can I just point out, recently I spoke to one of my closest friends who lives with her in-laws. Her husband is away most of the time, and they, you know, she lives with her in-laws with their child, and her in-laws are a bit difficult, admittedly, but the other day she returned from her home, which is in the same city, and she returned from her home after visiting her ailing grandmother at 6 o'clock, and her father-in-law said, I'm very ashamed that you're bringing this disgrace upon my family for returning home only after 6 o'clock. And this is a woman who has a PhD.
I wrote my he eyes said so that. Hard right now.
Yeah. He said that to my friend who has a PhD and has a child. She has her own money. She's independent, but she lives with her in-laws because tradition dictates that she does that. And because her husband is away, so everyone, her own family, will not support her if she says, I'm moving out and living on my own. But he had the audacity to say to her, I'm so ashamed that you're coming back to my home. It's such a disgrace that you're coming after 6 o'clock. Mm. And he doesn't have any daughters.
Wow.
He only has sons.
I think it's really important that this Me Too movement has come up in India, because it is generally a culture where we are quite... We're not encouraged to speak up when it comes to the truth, boy or girl. Because I'm not talking about sexual abuse here. I'm just talking about our culture in general, whether it comes to religion, atheism, education, whatever. If we speak out of line, or we speak about something that isn't part of the norm and the culture, we get shouted at. So the Me Too movement is a big... It's a whole different thing in India, because the cultural aspect of it has so many different angles that the Me Too movement is a different movement in itself in India. I don't think you can really compare the Me Too movement in India as you can in America because of the culture is so different. So I think
one of the primary concerns is you're bringing disgrace to my family by speaking up. You're bringing disgrace to us, to me, by sharing this story where you could have totally avoided this had you not been out at this hour or had you not been hanging out with this boy who took advantage of you. And that is something that I find extremely disturbing. And I do ask myself the question, had I been in that position, would my parents have stood up for me or would they have blamed me for having caused them this headache of their social circles finding out about the fact that this happened and that they had to answer questions of why I was out and about when I could have been safe at home?
Because I think I think it's quite similar in both India and America, where men who have been accused have come out to say, oh, the woman has done it out of spite, or they've done it to ruin my career, or they've done it because they have something against me. But the thing is really interesting that we both read up on some of these case studies where this is proven to be quite incorrect from the studies. I mean, I don't know about the cases in particular. I don't know if Stormy Daniels was lying about Trump or if Tanushree Dutta was lying about Nana Patekar or whatever. But Ankita, just share like the stats that you got. I think it's really interesting.
So this is based on a series of tweets that came out by Jeremy C. Young, who's an assistant professor of history at Dixie State University in Utah. And he explained quite clearly that in the last week of the 2016 election, Democratic donors, Susie Tompkins and David Brock, they decided to find out if women would come up and falsely accuse Donald Trump. So they offered $700,000 to any woman who would say that Donald Trump raped her. So as you can imagine, these women had whatever normal incentives you would consider women to have in order to lie about rape, and also extra cash for doing it. And weirdly, the result was that one woman came up. Just one woman came up and said that she would do it for $2 million. And then later on, when they agreed to give her that money, she decided not to come forward at all. And nor did any other woman come forward and take the money and say that Trump raped her, even for the added incentive of money.
Yeah. Even during the Clinton impeachment, Larry Flynt offered $1 million to anyone who said they'd had an affair with a GOP congressman. So $1 million was offered to any woman who came up and said they had an affair with a politician. Only one woman got paid, and the man that she had accused admitted that she was telling the truth. So you're paying large sums of money for women to lie about being sexually abused, and they're too afraid to come up. And this just proves that the stigma attached, the shame that's attached, the embarrassment that women feel to say that they've been raped is so grave, because it doesn't just affect them. They know the ripple effect this is going to have on their family, on their kids, and on their future, really, that not even $1 million or $2 million can change their minds to come up.
I mean, you're not saying that false accusations never take place. They do. There are false rape accusations out there, but it turns out that there have been studies on this as well. And the amazing fact is that there are kind like almost four consistent categories of people that make these kinds of false accusations based on all of these studies. They could be teen girls who are trying to cover up a pregnancy, for example, people with extensive criminal convictions tend to do this, people with even medical disorders who tend to fabricate these kinds of accusations. And also, obviously, the other category, which might be the biggest category, is people seeking revenge for quite petty things like, stealing their truck.
Yeah. But you just start to understand when you read on these things that women don't gain anything by coming up and speaking up the truth. In fact, the opposite happens, because they're put under the spotlight, they get questioned. And I mean, if I was in Dr. Ford's position, and if I was telling the truth in my eyes, and then someone said I was a liar, and someone consistently kept telling me that I was lying or falsely accusing someone, it kind of gets in your head a little bit. you saw the thing. Wait, hold on a second.
Is it my fault?
Is it my fault? Did I do something wrong? So you don't gain anything. Well, women generally, and this is again, we're just speaking from a general point of view. Women don't gain much. They gain a lot of shame in some situations. They gain a lot of media backlash.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, even if you paid a woman $1 million, she wouldn't come up to say the truth.
And one of the interesting identifiers of this is that a lot of women who are actually speaking the truth, their stories are not very wild. Like if Dr. Ford was maybe fabricating the whole Kavanaugh thing, she would have probably said that he was torturing her in his basement or things like that. But she only stated the facts, which were that he attempted to assault her. Her mouth was covered. She thought she was going to die. He tried to take her swimming dress off, which he couldn't. But that and he groped her, and that was the extent of it. She didn't even say that he tried to penetrate her. She basically spoke about facts that other people could easily see as an innocent misunderstanding.
And if, when you have false accusations in the US and false accusations in India, I think the issue lies behind the way the media portrays that.
Yeah.
And I feel like a lot of us as women are sort of pre-labeled as either fabricators or liars. And people will think twice whether they should believe a story. And I think that's why the Me Too movement has kind of some murky waters now, because of these false accusations. Well, supposedly false accusations. Especially in a place like India where people who are really respected in the Bollywood industry, Amitabh Bachchan, Nana Patekar, and I'm sure there's a longer list, but to be honest, I can't keep up. These are really respected people in the Bollywood industry. So some people find it very difficult to understand that they could do something so grave like this.
And the interesting thing when I read up about the Tanushree Dutta thing was it was very, obviously very brave of her to come up and say this is in India, where people turn against female actresses.
And not even just people, Ankita, the media are...
Yeah. Everyone savage. Just turns against them so quickly. For Twinkle Khanna took a photo of her resting her feet on a pile of books, and they said Goddess Saraswati is pissed off. I mean, it takes the smallest thing for a woman to offend all of the people in the industry and even in the public. For Tanushree Dutta to come up after 10 years and talk about an incident like that, obviously people said, how can you remember it? Why are you bringing this up? You're attention seeking because your career was over. And I read something written by a journalist who was at the scene when this happened. Mm. The journalist said that she arrived at the set and she saw that there was total chaos. Nana Patekar and the producer were having a heated discussion. All of the extra dancers were just sitting around waiting for something to happen. And Tanushree Dutta was in her van, and everyone said the actress is being difficult. Later on, these people called a mob to come and assault her as she was trying to leave the set. And This journalist went up to Nana Patekar and said, what happened here? And Nana Patekar's only response was, Meri beti jaisi hai, she's like my daughter. Okay, which made no sense at all, right? Yeah. And later on, this journalist went to Tanushree Dutta's house and was told the entire story in confidence off record. She came up now and said, Tanushree Dutta's account now is exactly the same as the one she gave this journalist in confidence off the record. Mm. And it hasn't changed.
Well, this journalist did an amazing thing because she put herself in the ring of fire as well to protect another woman.
And to tell the truth.
Yeah. And just to go back to what we were saying about that, if someone goes through a traumatic experience, they remember every detail.
Yeah.
I just remembered, and I know this might sound really stupid, but I remember my very first day of nursery. I remember how much I cried. I remember what I was wearing. I remember the route I took to get there. Mm-hmm. I was, 4 or 5 years old?
Yeah.
I still remember those, 10 minutes of trauma I went through.
Yeah.
Because I cried so much. I didn't want to leave my dad's hand.
Yeah.
So that was, so minor. That was so minor compared to what women have been through. So I think it's a good thought to end on and to just let our listeners get back to us. We've been getting a lot of good feedback from our previous episodes, and I really hope that we get some more here, because this is a really interesting topic to talk about, and I really want to make this an open discussion with a lot of girls, especially in India.
Yeah, so if you want to get in touch with us, please email us to mail@theysayoutsiders.com, or you can find us on social media at They Say Outsiders. We're most active on Twitter and Instagram. So if you tweet at us, or if you send us an Instagram direct message or comment on one of our photos, we will immediately see it. But either way, if you send us an email as well, we are really getting on top of our emails now. So
yeah,
you can expect a response from us. And thank you so much for all the emails you've sent so far. Thank you especially to, I think it was Vidushi, who had sent a very sweet email to me saying that when I spoke about my dad's condition, his heart condition and the surgery he went through last year, it inspired her to get her dad checked up because she was quite suspicious of his heart, his, you know, cardiac health. And it turned out that he had 3 blocks and he had to go through surgery and now he's recovering. It was very heartwarming to hear that story,
yeah.
Vidushi, so thank you.
Yeah, I hope he's getting better now, Vidushi. And thank you for that email. Please send us your thoughts and feedback. And thank you for all the love when we were at the Asian Media Awards. So, until next week, I'm Meenal.
And I'm Ankita.
And we are the Desi Outsiders.
Okay, bye.